Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is a podcast from BBC Studios, the commercial subsidiary of the BBC.
Hello and welcome back to Season 2 of the Talentworks podcast. If you haven't listened to us before, Talentworks is a production company within BBC Studios, and it's aimed at identifying forward-thinking talent with whom it can partner. The podcast is presented by Helen O'Donnell and me, Brona Monaghan. Thank you so much for listening. And don't forget to subscribe.
Amelia de Moldenberg is the brains behind the brilliant YouTube show Chicken Shop Date. Launched in 2014, the show's format involves Amelia going on first dates with grime artists, rappers, comedians and sports stars to chicken shops in and around London. She asks them about their childhood, relationships and careers.
Do you like nuggets?
Love them.
You love them?
Yeah, nuggets, turkey Twizzlers, chicken wings, anything from Iceland, frozen range.
Originally from and still based in London, Amelia studied fashion journalism at Central St Martins when she launched her YouTube channel. Prior to this, she had been writing a comedy column for an independent youth magazine called The Cut. In May 2018, she presented Channel 4 documentary Meet the Markles, in which she travelled to the US and interviewed numerous friends, family and past acquaintances of Meghan Markle. She has also appeared in a skit on The Big Narsty Show, and we recently had the pleasure of working with her in partnership with the BBC Writers' Room. Let's roll the tape. So, Amelia, you grew up in London, which is obviously a city that's full of inspiration. Who would you say were your comedic influences in your life? Was it people in your network or was it people that you saw on TV or in films?
I guess, it was my friends were my biggest influences when I was growing up, of funny people. I went to an all-girls school in central London, and I just feel like all the characters that I met there, the people who were characters in themselves, inspired me. And I had a great group of friends, and it was like a really, really mixed, diverse school with like so many different types of people from all different backgrounds. So I feel like that really sort of influenced my comedy, just sort of like eavesdropping on conversations, chatting to different people, or just like being aware of the funniness of real people, which I feel like comes through in like a lot of my work that I do.
And were you always aware that you were funny?
Yeah, obviously. Came out the womb telling jokes. No. Well, when I was at school, I didn't really have many friends, like, at all when I began school. And also, like, I was, like, the library assistant, so I'd, like, spend my breaks and lunch in the library returning books. And so maybe that was why I didn't have any friends. But so I found that, like, my way into making friends was through being funny. And my best friends that I have now, like, I can remember the exact moment when I met them in, like, class, because I was, like, turned around and, like, told them a joke, or like finished the end of something they were saying with like another little funny comment, and they were like, oh wait, who are you? And oh, you're quite funny, like you can hang out with us. And I was like, yes, finally. So yeah, I don't know, I kind of always knew that my I was funny as a way of like
connecting with people.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not sure how many people know this about you, but you studied fashion journalism at Central St Martins. So what was it about fashion specifically that interested you?
Well, from growing up, I always wanted to be the editor of Vogue. Like from when I was so young, because like, since I can remember, I had like scrapbooks where I would like rip out pages of Vogue and like write down like what I thought about the models, which is always like, this model's too ugly, get a new one. and other stuff like what clothes I think they should be wearing and things like that. And so my mum always said like, oh, you should go to St Martin's, like that is like the Oxbridge of fashion, and it's got such amazing alumni. So I feel like from a young age that was always like my sort of thing, I'm gonna go to St Martin's, da-da-da-da. And I was interested in art too, being creative. I kind of knew that I wanted to like maybe go to art school and do something like that. So that's how I started at St. Martin's, and I did the foundation there first. It was very art heavy and like a lot of drawing and stuff, and I'm really not artistic in that way at all. But one of the tutors told me that there was a new course starting that was fashion journalism. They'd never done it before as a BA. It was available as a master's course. So I was like, great, perfect. This is a writing course, which I feel like is more suited to me. So that's why I studied fashion. But like, I'm so happy I did, because fashion is a subject that is connected to so many other subjects. Like, you can connect it to, well, obviously I saw it as culture in general, but you can connect it to politics, to, you know, the environment, business, like everything. And the way I approached my course was, and the way our tutors approached our course was basically just like looking at journalism in a creative way, which I don't think I would have been able to do if I studied English or journalism. Or yeah, so I'm really happy I went there, and I got to meet some incredible people, like amazing design, fashion designers, like architects, like graphic designers, stylists, like all these amazing creative people that we did projects with and I became friends with. So yeah, it was an amazing place to be.
Yeah, I was going to say, what did you learn there? But I guess it is that further form of communication, that obviously fashion is something you wear, but it is another form of how people express themselves.
Yeah, definitely. But especially as we were like looking at through a journalism lens, it was like storytelling, but like around the world of fashion and the arts and creativity. And like our first project in first year was to get into as many fashion shows at Fashion Week as possible. Like, that was our first project.
How did you get into?
Well, I was just like, I'm too nervous to break in. So I was like, I know, I'll intern, I'll work for free, and that'll be my ticket in. So I emailed like a PR agency, and I ended up like doing the seats, showing people to their seats during shows. So I ended up like working on all those shows that the PR company did. So that was about like 3 shows. Yeah, and I ended up doing that the whole of through uni. But yeah, it's like influenced a lot of my work, and like now I'm one of the ideas I've got going that I'm just writing up at the moment is to do with the fashion industry. So there's so many incredible characters and people within fashion. Like, I'm really interested in people and, you know, like I said before, like just a natural person being themselves like can provide so much inspiration.
Absolutely.
And can be so funny just naturally.
And then at what point did you start working for Cut magazine?
Yeah, so the Cut magazine, not to be confused with the really famous one that's like in New York, was a youth-run magazine that was basically just for, literally, you could only be in it if you were under 21. And it was run out of a youth club in Northwest London. I got an email from my IT teacher who knew I was really interested in like media studies, and we didn't have a media studies course. So he said, oh, I found out about this after school club, basically. Do you want to go? So I started going every Wednesday after school. And yeah, that's how I started Chicken Shop Day. And basically what I owe everything to is that magazine.
And from your mouth, what is Chicken Shop Day?
Chicken Shop Day is a dating show set in a chicken shop where I attempt to try and find love, but my type is rappers. Only rappers, really.
And how did it work in print, first off? Because obviously it started as a column.
Yeah, it started as a column in the magazine. So it was literally like any friend or anyone I knew who was like a musician or had like made any sort of like sound. I would ask them if they wanted to come meet me in the chicken shop of their choice. And I would just write like a little paragraph before where I would like talk about, in a very sarcastic way, like my surroundings and like how my mom was like pushing me to go on these dates and how it was so romantic being in the chicken shop. And then I would just ask them the same questions I'm asking the guests now. And then I would just literally write up their answers. And then I would like write my thoughts. So I'd like write down my thoughts. So then they would reply, and then I would write down like, I thought this was quite weird. Like,
there's been a bit of a commentary.
The commentary, almost, yeah, exactly. There was a commentary there, and it was sarcastic as well. So a deadpan commentary. So yeah, that's how they were written. But it always stylistically had that deadpan voice to it, which is why I think it stood out, and like why people, very, very few people, but like the few people who did read the articles, like were really like big fans of it, and like were like, this is really cool, this is really different, because it had that style from the beginning, which is why when I decided to like turn them into a video series 5 years ago, I just was like, okay, I'm going to be the same sort of vibe as I am on paper and also in the room, but exaggerated even more.
Can you remember what the first inspiration was for it?
Well, I really wanted to interview musicians just because, you know, why wouldn't you want to like meet a musician and talk to them about what they do? And everyone at the magazine was like so into UK rap and grime. And I really wanted to get in on the conversation, like literally have something to talk about every Wednesday and not sit there like a lemon. So I thought, okay, I'll interview the musicians and then I'll be able to like get in their head or like know at least something. So I thought, okay, I'll do an interview series with musicians, and then thought, okay, a great way to do this would be a date. So I just wanted to like do something a bit different and thought that would be a cool way to do it. The magazine was like also super like quirky and like really sort of pushed those like thinking outside the box kind of ideas and had a real good sense of humor. Then someone said you should go on a date where you would never go on a date to make it funnier. Something we've been learning about a lot on this course, actually, like having that sort of juxtaposition or that like sort of turning something on its head automatically makes it funny. Like the fact that we're on a date in a chicken shop, like that's funny because you're not meant to be there, and like neither of us are meant to be there. So that's sort of how the origins of the idea happened.
And is the character a version of you, or is it a version of a journalist that you've made up in your head?
It's a version of me, yeah, for sure, because I used to get told off at school for being like sarcastic all the time, and also people would always pull me up on stuff, and it's even happened here, like meeting new people, like are you really pissed off, Amelia, like, or are you really annoyed, or what, you're doing such weird things with your face, or like all these things, and I would have no idea I was doing it. And so I was like, in a way I was kind of like, no one likes to be told like personality traits that you don't think of weird, and then they're like minding that. So it's kind of like a you to like people who would like pull me up on that, and I'll be like, okay, I'm gonna do it, and I'm gonna do it even bigger and exaggerate those quirks of myself.
And what was the bread and butter of getting it filmed? So when you first thought, I'm gonna film this, what was that process?
The process of filming, it was quite difficult because, like many people, I had no idea how to film something, or like I didn't have any camera equipment, or I didn't know anyone who could film something. Like everyone in the magazine was just kind of like writing or photographer. There was no videographers or anything. But I then had just been a runner on a music video, and it was super low budget and everyone was doing it for favors, and I was still 18 or whatever. And so I'd met these camera operators. And I was like, great, okay, finally I've met someone with a camera who I can ask to film this. So that's sort of when I realized, okay, now I can make the video, because I'd met this guy, Tom, and he said, yeah, sure, I'll rent a camera from like where I work. I can like use them after hours. He had another friend who would do the same. And then Marvin, who's been my long collaborator from the beginning on Chicken Shop Date, he had just started a job as an in-house editor, video editor. So then he was like, I'll edit them. And I was like, great. So we've got everything we need. But it's not as simple as that, because when you have no budget, it's like, ugh, like people dropping out, like just loads of things. I'd also blag my way into the shop at the beginning. I wouldn't shut it. It would still be open because I didn't have any money to shut it. Mm-hmm. So then there'd be like all the noise from people like in the background, and when I filmed the Tribuddy G episode, wasn't even that big then, but guys kept banging on the window and then coming in the shop, and so we'd have to stop the recording. And like, luckily I know Asim, who plays Tribuddy, so he was like fine about it, but I was just thinking, if this was just like somebody I didn't know, they'd be like, think it was so unprofessional. And it is.
So when was the first time that you did it with someone who you didn't know, did you feel pressure?
Yeah, so actually the column, I'd been doing it with different people I didn't know, but I guess that it was nice that the first one was with someone I kind of relatively knew. But like, I feel like I always get into this zone where I'm just in a zone when I meet them, and I kind of don't think about it too much.
Your character's unflappable.
Yeah, I was so nervous before Sean Paul because he's like the biggest star that I'd interviewed. And I was just like, he's obviously so gone to so many interviews and like probably has no idea about what the format is. And I only have half an hour with him. And it was just super stressful. And we were in Wales and I was like, so random. And I also was just so convinced he wouldn't turn up. But yeah. And then once I sit in the chair, I have to just stop thinking about it and just stop thinking about it.
At what point did you see it start to pick up momentum?
Probably after the Chibuddy G episode, because it was shared on Lad Bible. And then that, I was like, wow, okay, so you can be shared on these digital platforms. And that was also when they started getting bigger and they weren't around before. But before that, I was just literally like posting it on my Facebook page, like because the artists wouldn't even share them. And still, a lot of the artists don't share the stuff. So it's just been so gradual. Like I said, it's been 5 years now since the first video.
Wow.
Yeah, and like even longer since the column. So yeah, it's after the Chibuddy G episode, I got like my first person came up to me in the street and like recognized me from it. I was like, oh wow, so cool. But yeah, and then since then it's just been really gradual, I guess. And then think after the Creptin Conan episode last year or the year before, that was when I feel like it was even a bigger thing. But then it's only been like in the last year really that it's been that's like taken off, I guess.
And is there a world outside of that scenario? Like, would you like to develop that format further? Are there other characters that you can imagine in it? Or
yeah, maybe. Like, I really don't. And Chicken Shop Date isn't the only thing I do. Like, it, and I don't want it to be, and I want it to end soon. because I like want to end on a high, and I don't want to do it forever, and I'm already doing so many other things. But like, definitely there's like another world where like Amelia from Chicken Shop Date could exist, and like I'm got some ideas in development at the moment where I think it could go in terms of like still including the musicians, because that's just something that I've always again and again like want to come back to, and I love music so much, and just I just feel like there's such a space, there's a void where pop world left, there's a space I think for like really cool factual entertainment revolving like pop culture and music, and I just don't think it's been done right yet. There's so many amazing people like doing loads of like small things online, but there's not like a big TV show that's like captured that. I was on Don't Hate the Players, this show on ITV2 last year, which was pretty cool, and it was a hip-hop game show type thing, and that was fun.
That's it. It's there just needs to be more slots to promote emerging musicians, because I guess you've got your Jules Holland and you've got maybe that one slot on Graham Norton, but it's nice for artists to have something that's a bit different.
Yeah, and also that's funny, like that was why I started Chicken Shop Date, was because there was like loads of music interviews, but like there wasn't anything really that was funny anymore, or like where people weren't taking themselves seriously. That's what I hope I do with Chicken Shop Date, is like the whole thing I'm trying to get out of it is like showing a different side to the artist, you know, showing them being vulnerable or showing them being funny, just something that's not this sort of media trained glaze. And I don't ever speak to them really about their music.
Was Pop World quite an inspiration?
Yeah, like Pop World is like one of my biggest inspirations. Simon Amstel, like Makita Oliver, even with Alex Chung, is great. I loved that so much.
Do you feel that to ban the hoodie is against human rights?
Yeah, it is, because, you know, like, you got to think back in time, yeah? Like, all the monks and whoever wore hoods.
The monks, they wore a lot of hoods.
Yeah, they wore hoods, yeah. No one had a problem with it then, and it's like...
And what next? The polo neck?
Probably.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Basically a recurring thing that we like to ask every guest on season two, which is talent or works. So is there a specific talent or a piece of work that has like been really integral to your sort of to inspire in you?
Yeah, I'd have to say it was the Simon Amstel interview with the Kooks. Like, I don't know if anyone's seen it, but it's on YouTube and it's so funny. He like pretends to be their therapist and just the questions that he's saying to them and they just like have no idea, and it's just so perfect and so awkward and so like you're like, oh my god, like just the fact that you've just never probably seen an interview like that with your favorite musician is just so cool, and he's so deadpan and brilliant. I love that. And Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis is incredible too.
I love Lamar from Afar from Pop World.
I haven't seen that. Oh, obviously, I know who Lamar is.
So simple. It's I'm still at one end of the street, Lamar at the other end, and they're conducting the interview with.
See,
brilliant.
So brilliant.
Wait, yeah. What do I mean? These things.
Microphones.
Megaphones.
Oh my god!
And it was called Lamar from Afar.
That is so good. And then I watched this other one I found on YouTube where he was with Amy Winehouse when she was first nominated for her Brit Award, and she's going around Camden like being like, who wants to vote for Amy Winehouse? And nobody knows who she is.
Jamelia.
Yeah.
Jamelia.
So good.
Society.
I don't know what I'd do if I met him. I'd be like, oh my god.
So I read online that you've said you've received, well, you feel like you receive a lot of scrutiny because you're a female character.
Yeah, I feel like this has been exaggerated because maybe I said it like
something
one
context,
time. No, as in I said it once, but I feel like it's because people always ask you like, how do you feel like as a woman like in the industry? But then also it is true that I did receive a lot of scrutiny when it began.
Yeah.
Chicken Shop Date began, because I feel like it was sort of like quite came out of nowhere, and people were so used to seeing a chatty, bubbly presenter, and I wasn't that. And also the majority of like female presenters that are on telly are like very made up and like, yeah, sort of Barbies, and I'm not like that. So I think a lot of the comments were like, can you get someone better looking to present this? And I was like, well, you're talking to me. I'm the producer and the director and the host, and the answer is no. But now the majority of the comments I got on Chicken Shop Date are like really super positive, because I just think it's been 5 years now, so it's like,
yeah,
get it. I'm different in that way. But sorry, I butted in on what your question even was.
No. I was just, it's something that Helen and I talk about a lot, because we're big fans of comedy genre, and you don't see a huge amount of women doing online comedy. And we just sometimes wonder, is it because of trolling? You know, is that just something that...
Yeah, definitely. Especially on YouTube.
Yeah.
Like on YouTube, it's like vast majority of like guys who comment on the videos, it's all men. Like my audience is like 70% men. Boys, probably teenagers, children. I feel like I've like drilled it into them. I've been there consistent in my character that I feel like now I've just proven like, this is me. This is me. This is the character. And I think people get it now. And I see it when I do stuff with Vice. Obviously Vice, the comments and Vice, every Vice video are just horrendous anyway. But like my stuff I do for Vice, I get the most vile comments, but it's mainly about my presenting style, not my appearance or like anything, but it's my style. And I know that all the men, they don't get it. They don't get that.
They don't, but the
men presenters on Vice, they don't get that kind of thing. Like, why is she so weird? Like, she should be nicer to the people, or all these different things that they say that are super gendered. And I have this comment. someone said on a Chicken Shop Date video, which was, she's two butters to be acting so prestige. And I now have it on t-shirts. So that's my merch. So like, I just think you have to take those comments and just, you need to own them. And then they just make you feel, in a way, they like make you feel better because you're like, look at me, I'm still doing it. I'm still me. And this comment doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, just take their idiotic comments and make it your own.
Yeah. Also, two butters to be acting so prestige is a great line.
And so we're here this week on a writer's retreat with talent that really are self-starters in the comedy genre. So, I mean, comedy has evolved a lot since the time of sourcing people from Cambridge and Oxford, and it's now turning to much more of a diverse network. How important do you think it's been for you that you've owned this start of your career? Like, you are a self-starter.
Totally, like 100%, it's so important. But to be honest, it kind of came from a place that I wasn't being allowed on the traditional broadcasters. Like, I pitched Chicken Shop Date and like nobody wanted it, and I feel like I would have happily have just like done it on Channel 4 or whatever, or like been asked to do that. But you know, it came from that place where I was getting doors shut in my face, even though I was only in school. But still, it's like, you want to do something and people say no, so you just have to do it yourself, which is what I think everyone here and all creators who have done something is probably, yeah, it's probably why they're doing it. But it's been amazing to be able to have my own show, and I really don't take it for granted at all, because I know there's so many young people who are in the entertainment industry who have never had something of their own, and they've always been like a small cog in like a big machine of so many other producers, directors, like having a say in what they're doing. And with Chicken Shop Date and the other stuff that I do, I'm like the creative director of it. Like, I have full control in like who the guests are. I produce it myself. I like do all the talent booking myself. I'm in the edit every day that we're in the edit. And I do all the promo and everything myself. So I'm like now can do like loads of different jobs, and I understand how those things work. But also, yeah, it's amazing to have something that is yours, because I think you can get so deflated when you have a great idea and then it just gets sort of distorted into something that you don't even know anymore because of the amount of people that have say in it.
And at this week, is there anything that you've taken away?
Yeah, like this week has been incredible. There's been so many amazing classes and sessions that we've done. Like, it's been so practical, which has been so great, because I'm someone that really like feeds off that like practical learning. So us having these incredible comedians and writers come in and then do classes where they teach us something, and then they go, okay, go off and do it, and then we share it, is like, for me, that's how I love to learn. So it's been great. And also, just you realize how much of comedy is about templates and structure that have existed for years. So this week has done is like made me feel like comedy is like so much less daunting than I thought it was. It's also given me loads of tools to make my comedy and my jokes better. It's inspired me, because it's amazing to be around people who have such like passion for like what they do. And also, it's just been really nice to be able to talk to people about work, because none of my friends do this job, and I never get to talk to people about comedy writing or like ambitions in that way. That's like that you get when talking to someone who has the same ambitions as you. So I was talking to Emma Gannon, and I said, we haven't spoken about anything that is not writing this whole time. I don't know about anyone's personal business, which is crazy, because I just feel like you spend so much time like in the pub, like just talking about two friends who have like got together on the weekend and they shouldn't have. And, you know, so it's just refreshing, really. So, yeah, I've learned so much. It's been great. And it's also, I was super nervous about coming, because I was like, everyone's going to be so much more experienced or like so much funnier than me or better at writing than me. And just the fact that I've been able to like stay at the level of everyone, no one's been better than anyone else. Like, everyone's just been on the same level, and that's just great in itself, like knowing that you can keep up.
And one of the overarching or sort of things that we keep hearing is that comedy is most of the time comes down to voice, and you have a very specific voice.
Yeah.
And that can take people like years to find.
That's been so nice to hear as well, is like, again, another big thing that we've learned is like how there's so many stories and shows, if you boil it down to like what the nuts and bolts of the show is, very similar, nothing really original, quite generic, but it's the voice, it's the person telling the story that like is the big thing, and everyone has that just naturally. So it's about honing that voice, which I'm really happy that I have already, and I didn't even know that would be such a important thing. So it's made me feel a lot more confident.
So what would you like to achieve in the future? What's next?
I'd like to get Drake on Chicken Shop Day, which will happen. I've been
Where are you at on that?
I went to the show twice. I like now know people who know him. Like, I feel like I'm like 2 degrees of separation from him. We've spoken to his label. Like, I'm really deep into this whole thing of Drake getting a date with Drake. But I just think I need to meet him. I think if I met him, even if it was at a party, then that's my in. He just needs to meet me. Definitely watched it.
Would you end on Drake? If you get Drake, yeah. Is that...
That's why I want Drake, so I can stop doing Chicken Shot Day. No, there's so many people I want to get on, like Jay Huss, Giggs, Steph London, like so many people. But so I want to get Drake and then retire Chicken Shop. And I want to think of a new interview format. I want to think of a factual entertainment program, which I host. And I want to write a comedy that maybe I'm not even in.
All really achievable goals.
Yay. And I want, save the world, stop global warming.
Yeah, same.
World peace. I'm really excited for what you're going to do, Amelia. Like,
thanks.
You do have an incredible sense of self, like a really like strong voice.
Yeah, I hope. Oh, thanks. I'm just trying to be like not like anyone else. That's what motivates me, is like to be as ungeneric as possible. So like if I see some things done away, I'll just try and subvert it, which maybe is how I've crafted this voice.
You'll look back in this moment when you're like clinking glasses with Drake and think, remember when we didn't know each other?
Yeah, it's so true. Now I live with you.
Thanks very much for chatting to us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. If you want to find out more about us, we're on Instagram at BBC Studios Talentworks.
This podcast is produced by Shola Aleje for BBC Studios.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.